Hi, you're listening to the Petri.com MJF Chat Show. I am Mary Jo Foley, aka your Petri.com community magnet, and I am here to interview tech industry experts about various topics that you, our readers and listeners, want to know about. Today's MJF Chat is going to be all about the new rules for running your own services business. And my special guest today is Richard Campbell. He is an entrepreneur, a self-professed rabid podcaster, a Microsoft regional director, and a Microsoft MVP, plus so much more. Thank you so much for doing this, Richard.
So excited to be on your show there, MJ. It's fun to be in the other seat, you know.
Exactly. I've been on your show a few times, but I don't think I've ever had you as a guest.
Well, and I've done Windows Weekly with you and Paul a few times.
Oh, that's true.
Always a black boondoggle.
Exactly. So I'm going to give the listeners here a little context. If you don't know Richard Campbell, and I don't know who doesn't in our business, but Richard is one of those people who can truly talk about anything. So I wanted to make sure to find a topic that he could address that perhaps many other people could not. And it seemed like during the pandemic, consulting, like many businesses, is undergoing a lot of changes. That's why it seemed like a great time to get you to opine on what people should be doing to adapt to the new world order.
Absolutely.
Well, and you've been doing a series on your own show, right, about working from home during the pandemic?
Yeah, on the Run As Radio, which is the podcast that focuses on IT pros, as the pandemic sort of took place, this is a funny story. For the first time in a number of years, because we always publish on Wednesdays, April 1st was going to fall on a Wednesday. And so I had literally been planning for months to do a gag show for April 3rd, do something funny, right? And I'm not going to reveal what it is because hopefully I'll get to do it again. Because by the middle of March, nothing was funny.
Yep.
It just seemed completely inappropriate. So instead, I did a solo show where I literally said, listen, like I've been in IT a long time. This is an unprecedented situation. Here's what I'm thinking about. And sort of just went down my list of things like, how are you going to scale your VPN? How are you helping your people work from home? You know, how are you maintaining infrastructure? Can you still maintain your security perimeters? Like all of those IT related things. And the reaction of the show was very powerful. And so I committed to doing an additional show run as per week that's specifically the pandemic series and sort of took that 25-minute checklist that I ran through for April 1st and turned it into a half hour on each of those subjects. But I feel like now coming into July, we're finally talking about how do you get your people back into the office?
Right.
What does it look like, you know, so the story arc is still ongoing.
Definitely. And when we talked about doing this chat about how to kind of renovate your own services business, you mentioned to me that it's really key for consultants to figure out what they can do remotely, number one, and then decide whether or not the services you're providing hit on immediate ROI. So I thought it'd be good to maybe get going with that and say, how do people evaluate what should be considered an immediate ROI project? Like what are some examples of those?
Well, there's a key class to that whole thing is what pain has the company, your customer got right now that they may or may not fully even understand. Obviously the sudden need to work from home meant, do you know how to scale their VPN? Do you know how to, you know, to help their remote workers actually function effectively at all? It's not enough to just be online, but can they actually get to the resources they need in a relatively secure way? Are they able to collaborate meaningfully? You know, all of those pieces come into play. And so there's lots of service there, but they're almost not real projects. They're just the scramble to try and get people functioning. Which I think largely happened, at least in the Western world, in April and May, although it's still ongoing. You know, I continue to have these conversations about with IT folks that are now starting to help tune the employee Wi-Fi.
Right.
It's not just that the worker's at home, it's that everybody's at home. Kids are using bandwidth to do their school lessons, and the spouse is also working from home, and it's like, you know, internet is overwhelmed. And so there's lots of that sort of patch kind of projects. But I also think that there's a bigger scope here of the economic impact of the pandemic and the amount of work that did stop. Like I have talked to consultants where their customers simply stopped everything.
Yeah.
Which I think is a panic reaction. And understandably, this is unprecedented times. You don't really know what to do next. And so cutting expenses seems like a reasonable thing to do. And so I think it's incumbent on the service provider to also be able to be that more rational force. I'm seeing IT folks in general, not just IT, but dev, all of these kind of thriving in this environment because we're sort of used to problem solving.
Yeah. Yeah.
The pandemic is just another problem to solve. Now, if you sit back and have the existential dread around it, you can impair yourself.
But right.
on how do I make this situation better with the skills that I have? Mm-hmm. There are genuinely services that you can provide. And you're seeing again and again, both internal and external people kind of stepping up as de facto leaders through the pandemic, helping mm-hmm. these businesses to survive and hopefully even to thrive.
Right. I think that's a really important point because I know there are a lot of people in IT who are like, oh, you know, I'm obsessive compulsive or I'm really too detail oriented. But I think in this kind of an environment, like you're saying, this whole like I can solve this. It's a problem. I'm good with dealing with a current crisis kind of a thing and uncertainty. I'm really good with that. I think all those kind of soft skills are super important. And these are things people who are in IT kind of have just built into their makeup in a way.
Yeah. And hopefully they're using a little bit of their communication skills to sort of assemble that checklist because mm-hmm. there's plenty of business leaders that are overwhelmed. And so when someone comes in as a sort of force of calmness of here's an order of execution, things we can take care of today, mm-hmm. stuff that we can actually improve. How do we relocate all those machines? How do we scale up the VPN? Like all of those sorts of tasks and gathering useful information because there's plenty of services out there. So that you suddenly become this service, this help to take problems off the table because I've got plenty of others that you can't deal with. So anything right. you can say, hey, I can make this issue go away for you, makes them, you know, excited.
Right.
Not every business gets to shut down. And it's not always obvious things, you know, it's subtle things, surprising things too. There's a local bakery, a friend of mine, they specialize in cannoli and very like a Vancouver kind of place, great, but also good baked goods and so forth. And it's the sort of place that on a Saturday afternoon you go and you get a cappuccino and you have a biscotti. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. All of course that stopped. Mm-hmm. But Sammy had been starting up a catering business. He wasn't there yet, but he'd stood up a website, which was basically just brochureware, and he'd gotten a truck. So the van had just arrived around the time mm-hmm. that the shutdown started. And so he was smart enough to engage with some tech folks that turned that brochure website into an e-commerce site. Mm-hmm. And so that he deliveries, you know, mm-hmm. at a distance, dropping boxes off at doorsteps and so forth. Now, it's not like everybody needs cannoli, but at the same time, what he stumbled into was, A, he makes wicked lasagna, and we can all use more lasagna. It makes your life better.
Definitely.
The bakery supplies eggs, milk, mm-hmm. yeast, flour. Because he's on the commercial side, his supply pipeline is completely different than the grocery store. So when the grocery store was out of all those things, he wasn't. Mm-hmm. So for better or worse, in Western society, we built separate commercial and retail produce pipelines. It's efficient. But it meant in this weird situation where all of the restaurants were closed and the bakeries couldn't take orders and so forth, they had lots of stuff when the grocery store aisles were empty. And so he was suddenly busy as could be supplying those core supplies and cannoli. it kept his business alive. But it was just that little bit of technology. Like it for us as tech folks, standing up three or four pages of e-commerce and creating a payment engine for them, that's all cloud stuff, right? It was mm-hmm. switched on in a matter of days. And it wasn't pretty. It's not mm-hmm. the most beautiful site you've ever seen, but it worked. And
right.
It kept people working. It kept his company functioning. And it kept people with the stuff they needed right at the time mm-hmm. they needed it.
Yep. Yep. You also mentioned to me like something that might be considered an immediate ROI project would be working with touch-free technology. And, you know, I think some of these things are super obvious, what people could specialize in, like remote medical services. Yeah, that's perfect timing for this. Or, you know, pandemic support projects. But then when you kind of extend that and think more broadly, just not specifically about, oh, I you know, you have to be more careful about what you're touching, but then kind of position it as touch-free technology. I think that's a really good way to kind of repackage something to make it look like a bigger kind of a solution that you as a consultant are delivering?
Yeah, I've seen a few folks there that have grabbed on to just using text messaging. Well, everybody's got a phone.
Right.
So, you know, you're arriving at the home improvement center and you're not allowed in there. You can wait on the phone, which seems like a waste. It's so much easier to text that you're there and what parking spot you're in and what your order number is. And then they know to come out and drop stuff off. Or if you are doing the only so many people allowed in the store, you can do a virtual line where everybody stays in their car rather than lining up 6 foot spaced apart possibly in weather. That we can all just sit in our cars and literally have a text message like, it's your turn to go in now.
Mm-hmm.
That is, again, not a terribly complicated software, but it specifically speaks to this unique moment that, and arguably, this is all infrastructure that will be useful later.
Yeah, it will.
To make it easier for people to work, to communicate the way they want to communicate, especially in the retail side, there's this concept of omni-channel that it shouldn't matter whether you're in person, on the phone, via email, on a website, whether you want to buy something, have something delivered, pick something up, or return something, that they all integrate together. And in reality, most businesses that have a variety of these things, they're not integrated. That often the website was a feature stood up after retail was already in place and literally has its own inventory and own supply chain management. And so when the retail was shut down, there's literally no workflow for all of those products. It's like, we're out of this in the website, but we've got it sitting in the stores. How dumb is this?
Right.
And again, that's a software problem.
Definitely.
Solved with some good programming. So these are hugely valuable projects that will always be valuable. I guarantee you it was on somebody's to-do list, but it was way down at the bottom. And suddenly it should be at the top.
Exactly. So we're talking about things that people should think about working on, immediate ROI projects. But then there are some things people should put on the back burner too, longer term ROI projects, right? Like this isn't really the time probably for those. So what's an example or two of those, and what do you think consultants should be doing in terms of thinking about longer term projects?
Well, I think in general, that immediate ROI is, are we, the revenue of the business is already impacted. How do we replace that revenue? How do we repair that revenue? Like the things that are breaking right now, like people can't be present in the store or our return system's not working correctly. All those things need to be fixed first. But as you think longer term about in a general economic downturn, and I've been through a few, it's the upside of doing this for 40 something years, is that every time you have a downturn, it's sort of a retrenchment. You go back and you go back to core values of how does this directly benefit the business? And we have not really had a major downturn in, well, at least in 10 years. You can talk about whether the Great Recession, the 2008-2009, was a significant one. It was for some folks, it wasn't for others. But so it's easy and I deal with people all the time, that's just like, they've only ever had a growth mindset, growth. And that leads to lots of experimentation. And so where the potential return is not obvious, and you have to question, like, why does that project even exist? Because sometimes they're competitive projects. Well, the competitor is doing it, so we need to do it too. But they're experimental, where you don't know what it might reveal. And that's interesting, but this may not be the time for it. So an example of this would be many of the machine learning and AI projects. Because it became very hip a few years ago.
It did.
If you wanted to be a relevant business, you needed to have an AI strategy, whatever that may be. And that ultimately means you carve off a little bit of budget, you get your guys training, and they're basically experimenting. They're trying to find the way forward. It's hard to hire anybody in that space because the demand was so high. So, you know, getting experienced people was difficult. So you're mostly growing your own people into that space. And that doesn't make a lot of stuff at first. You know, I always think about those first projects with a new technology are very much like the clutch in your first car, right? You're not going to go very far and you're going to make some bad smells. You're learning, you're experimenting, right?
Yeah.
That's part of a company growing, is maybe we find something important here. Mm-hmm. But when I'm in this downturn scenario where I'm not sure about revenues, I want to take those resources and focus them on things I know will have return. So I'll backburner those projects. I'm not saying I'm never going to touch them again.
Right. Yeah.
The biggest thing that I saw in the past few months is everybody going down that to-do list and shuffling it around.
Mm-hmm.
you know, we always talked about improving workflow and, you know, improving automations and so forth, but the returns seemed to be small that time. So they were tertiary, where the potential of an AI project and your ability to show yourself as an avant-garde company for your recruiting side and, you know, generally your stock value, those made a lot of sense. And now we've turned that over and said, hey, everywhere that I can show incremental improvement on a routine basis, that project gets priority. Anywhere that I'm not sure that it's experimental, that project's going to lose priority.
That's a good way to look at it. Just kind of make that your guideline, right? I also like a point you made in our pre-chat about you need to think about ROI more broadly. And you mentioned a couple of things that I think many IT pros wouldn't consider ROI type projects. But like if you rethink how to position the pandemic and the economic downturn, and you think about it as disaster recovery and disaster response, and even supporting people when they're afraid, right? I think those are things people could say, I know how to do that. I just didn't think that was really an ROI kind of a case.
Well, you know, especially when folks feel so uncertain,
right?
That regular cadence part's important. And then we also disperse them to their homes. So no water cooler talk, no connection. So, you know, a friend of mine who's an IT pro started writing a daily email to the whole company. And it was, part of it was, hey, you know, I know it's taking a while for me to deal with your issue. Here's the issues we've worked through. Here's what's solved. Here's what's coming next. And so he created a heartbeat of the organization. He effectively became the water cooler that folks, and he always had something funny to say. And he always did it like, and this, on this day 10 years ago, like those kinds of things that reminded us we're still a group, right? That we're still an organization, that we're working, we're making, you know, I look at, he sent me a couple of copies of the emails. We talked a lot about that, about what it was doing to morale, that progress is being made, things are being addressed, your patience will be rewarded, happier times are ahead. We're still pulling for each other. You know, to the point where folks were talking about, I really look forward to your email. Right? And I think that that mindset of reminding, we're all trying to be compassionate with each other, even though we, and I hate the term socially distant, it's the wrong term, it was a mistake to use it. We need to be physically distant. We really need to be socially close.
That's true. Yeah.
More than ever, because we are together, even though we're somewhat separate.
It's true. It's funny because like emails that I get now from companies, from PR agencies, they all start out like, I know things are hard and I'm sorry to interrupt your day. I'm sure you're having a hard time coping. I'm thinking, wow, that's so different from the usual emails that I get, you know?
Well, it's interesting to think in terms of emails as interruption, just like phone calls are interruption.
Right. Right.
And I actually have thought a lot about how I open and close emails differently in the past few months. Where I am asking, I hope you and your family are well, because I really care. I always have. But I used to be able to presume they were, and I'm not today. Yeah. So just reminding you that this is important to me too.
That's true. That's true. I think also the whole idea of having not smaller goals, but more incremental or nearer term goals is important, because if you just look at the big picture and are we ever going to go back to the office and are things ever going to go back to the way they were, I think you get discouraged. And if you can kind of find things that are closer or more what you feel like are more doable, it really helps break things up into a more manageable set of tasks, and it makes your days feel a little less never ending.
Well, and plus anything you're looking more 3 to 6 months in advance, you're speculating.
We don't know. Yeah.
And if you focus on that, you will make yourself crazy. Better take those smaller bites and make progress, because it's the only way to get through anyway. And all of those things build up to an ability to respond to the next wave of changes. Right? We are putting our house in order. It's certainly something I'm seeing on the services side, is that we're doing more maintenance. As the immediate crisis has been resolved and the speculative projects make less sense, what should you work on? And it's like, are our backups in order? Do we have a failover strategy that works? That, you know, Satya Nadella certainly talked about, we had 2 years of move to the cloud that happened in 2 months. So more of that, are our cloud optimizations correct? Do we know how these things work? I've talked to a lot of folks who's like, I don't know that the company's infrastructure has been in better shape than it is right now. It's a very good time for it to be in good shape because so many other things are fragile. We don't have the bandwidth to have another failure.
Right. What do you think about using this time for reskilling and upskilling? I mean, that's a big theme that we keep hearing, but do you think that is something worth looking at? And is there any kind of subset of that that you jumps out at you and says, you should be doing this right now? You shouldn't even be questioning it.
Yeah, I always question everything anyway. Never does one size fit all. But true. The most generalized move you can count on is cloud. Right. Is that in general, utilizing third-party infrastructure to increase your connectivity and your ability to keep your people bound together rather than through the narrow straw that is the interconnection into your office or into your data center, that's a strengthening feature. But there's lots of preventative work across the board, stuff you meant to get to, but was always, not as shiny. The cool projects that made for good headlines. At the time when there's very little cool, we're just trying to keep doing the right thing. Going into that, using the Covey term, quadrant two, that, preventative, protective, maintenance kind of mindset, those are all about strengthening the whole because we don't know the future well. And we are going to be more resilient. There is going to be more twists and turns. I do not expect us to go back to, quote unquote, the way we were. Things will always be different, but they will also not be like they are right now.
Right.
I have a show coming on Runez that was specifically the return to work show. And I went to Cynthia, who's a specialist in workplaces. And we really ended up in a conversation about the rethinking of the workspace, starting with that question. Why do we go to the office? Mm-hmm. What is there? Once you've learned to work from home and you're productive there, not everybody is. There's plenty of folks that can't do that, but there's plenty of folks that can. What is it about the office that's useful? And ultimately came down to this concept of collaboration. So it makes sense for me to bring my team in so that we're together because that is more productive. However, under pandemic conditions, the current seating arrangement just isn't going to work. One option is, okay, only every other cube is occupied, so everybody's distant. Well, that means that the whole team is not there and you sort of eliminate the value of going to the office. Mm-hmm. Okay, I need the whole team there, but we still need to be more distant. So suddenly there's this conversation about redesigning the office. How do I create a pod of 8 or 10 people sufficiently distant that would all be on a team and they would use it maybe once a week? Which then it means there can't be personal desks because I need to use that 5 days a week. So it'll be 5 different teams that are using it. So this idea of personal workspace gets diminished for shared workspace, but safe workspace that allows us to collaborate when we need to. That's a lot of different thinking. And it's not unprecedented. There's other workspaces like that. If you've got a remote sales team and they come in once in a while, you have sort of hot desk environment already. Mm-hmm. But the idea that you think about more traditional office workers in the same model where 4 days a week we work remote, 1 day a week we all get together for those specific tasks that are best served by in-person collaboration.
Definitely a lot of things to consider.
So for me, that opening question of what do I do as a service business, like, holy, there's a lot to do, but they're different things. And where your customer will grab on to you is when you've got clear thinking about this. Mm-hmm. You are thinking about the next problem and the next problem and the next problem that they're all going to encounter. And so that you have a plan, you at least have some ideas so that they can have the conversation that has to happen next. It's not a long way in the future. This return to work wave is only just beginning now, but we've been thinking about it for a couple of months.
Yep. Exactly. Well, thanks. That's a perfect note to end on, Richard. Thanks, as always, for all the insights and the good stories and the cannoli and the lasagna.
The best. Still have, I got a couple, even when he was winding down the delivery part, I'm like, before you stop, I need a couple more lasagnas.
Definitely. Yeah, I would be that too. I'd be like, can I stock a couple extras of that?
Cool. All right. But the cannoli you have to eat that day. They do.
Yes.
Not
no, but it would be rude not to. As
well, I share them with my neighbors, right? I get a dozen and I wrap them up in pairs and just leave them on doorsteps because you can't eat them all. I mean, fun to try, but you can't.
Exactly. All right. For everyone else listening to this chat right now, I will be posting more information soon on Petri about who my next guest is going to be. Once you see that, you can submit questions directly on Twitter for this guest. And in the meantime, if you know of anyone else, or even yourself, who might make a good guest for one of these MJF chats, please do not hesitate to drop me a note. Thank you very much.